Welcome to the Expert Speak, a service of the Florida Psychiatric Society. I'm Abby Strauss, and thanks for listening.
Our science now allows us to look at a certain genetic makeup in our bodies that helps us better plan for interventions. One of the more common tests for this has to do with helping us better understand how medications are metabolized and how we might expect to get a good dose into a person. This field has grown wildly and remains some confusion about what are the more accurate testing modalities. Many people see that sometimes they can get this testing done without a physician. We'll get to that in a minute. Right now, we want to learn a little bit more about it overall. Rachel Earls is the medical science liaison manager for a company called Myriad, and they do genetic testing. She kindly agreed to talk to us today to explain this very rapidly growing body of science. Dr. Earls, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here today.
What is actually being measured in your test? People want to know if this is the type of information that will tell us which medications actually work for them. And I must preface this by saying that the testing panel that you do specifically looks at psychiatric medications, but the genes are not limited. What are you measuring? Tell us a little bit about what you're looking at.
Great place to start. Luckily now, there are a lot of different genetic testing options. A lot of the different methods can be confused with one another. There are diagnostic genetic tests. Do you have a certain disease? There are predictive or pre-symptomatic genetic tests that tells you likelihood of developing a disease. But the test that we're going to talk about today is called pharmacogenomic testing. Pharmacogenomic testing looks at specific genes that can tell us information about how a patient may metabolize certain medications, or likelihood of response to certain medications, or risk of side effects. There's no diagnostic value with this test here. This test just looks how genetic variability may play a role in affecting a patient's likelihood to respond to certain medications. As you mentioned, the product that Myriad utilizes looks at how genes can affect mental health medications specifically. These genes that we look at, particularly the metabolism genes, are cytochrome P450 liver enzymes. And these don't just metabolize mental health medications, they metabolize all medications. Information that we can learn about how a patient may metabolize or respond to many different medication types. The biggest misconception that we see and hear a lot is people think that pharmacogenomic testing will tell you which medication will work, or it will circumvent a clinician's clinical judgment. I am here to debunk that myth. That is not what this testing does. This testing just provides objective information on your patient that is meant to be used in conjunction with all other clinical factors and decision-making to help select a more appropriate medication. Medications are designed with the presumption that people will all metabolize medications the same, and that's just not the case. This just provides an insight into how a patient's genes may affect that process.
One of the things that makes a lot of sense to patients, and I'll tell them, this helps us answer a simple question. If everybody else needs 10 milligrams, maybe you'll need 15 or maybe you'll need only 10. And so we look at rapid metabolizers, slow metabolizers. Give us a little bit of oversight about the actual results and how it helps us better understand how to better dose a medicine.
Excellent question. Some of the genes that we look at on our report are called pharmacokinetic genes. So these genes are genes that can provide information on how quickly or how slowly a patient may metabolize medications. There are certain areas of the gene that we look at that can tell us information about how this happens. So as I mentioned earlier, drugs are created with the assumption that most people will metabolize medications the same way. But through years and years of research, we know that that's not the case. The genes that break down these drugs are very polymorphic, or they're very prone to differences amongst different people. What we do is we place these genes into a category. These categories are called metabolizer phenotypes, and they tell us information about how quickly or how slowly your patient may break down these medications. The reason that this information is significant is because if your patient may fall under the category of a poor metabolizer, and what that means is that their gene doesn't work as effectively to break down drugs, they may get a buildup of that drug in their system because they don't metabolize it as effectively. And as a result, a starting dose for a patient, you may be giving them more of a medication than you realize because the genes that are meant to break down that drug are not working as well. Why may some people have a great response at 10 milligrams of a starting dose? Why may may some people have side effects? Why may some people not respond to a starting dose? One of the factors that may be affecting that is simply how quickly or slowly their body is able to excrete this drug. On these pharmacogenomic tests, what they do is they tell you information that your patient may metabolize medication X more slowly. You may want to start at a lower dose. So it helps tailor the dosing specifically to the needs of your patient's genetics, and it doesn't follow that assumption that all patients break down drugs the same way. On this particular report as well, if we know that the patient metabolizes a medication very slowly, it can also shed some light that they may be at increased risk of side effects as a result. These pharmacokinetic genes can help personalize the dosing for that particular patient. Specifically in the field of mental health, as many of you all know, it generally is a trial and error approach. That information proactively to help tailor the treatment regimen to the patient
is a bit more complicated, to be sure. Medications themselves can impede the metabolism of other medications. And so very often on the package inserts, the prescriber will say, do not use with other medications that inhibit CYP2D6. If you're already by nature a slow metabolizer, and now you're taking a medication that's going to impede the metabolism, metabolism will be even slower. And that can expose you to more side effects because the blood level is going to increase more rapidly. It gets very sophisticated, but it is a necessary sophistication. It must get very complicated for you folks to try to explain this all in one simple report. It's a bit much.
It is. We try to simplify it as much as possible. There's a lot of layers to this. What we're mentioning and going through with pharmacogenomic testing is gene-drug interactions, how a patient's genes can affect a certain drug. And there's also another layer to it of drug-drug interactions. Many times we see patients aren't just on one medication. Some medications increase the blood level of another medication, inhibit the other medication. There is a lot of layers when it comes to thinking about how a medication may work specifically for a patient. In terms of the gene-drug interactions, the way that we show it, we put them in different colored categories, and we provide clinical considerations or clinical information telling you what is driving that. Is it a metabolism issue? Is it a mechanism of action issue? And provide general recommendations that you may utilize if you deem them necessary. One thing that I would love to talk about with that green, yellow, red system, I think it's human nature to think green is good, red is bad. And I am going to go on a myth debunking kind of journey here. One thing that we spend a lot of time on the medical team talking about is that if a medication is in the green, what that means is that from a genetics perspective, there's no reason why this medication shouldn't work. However, as you just alluded to, there are many factors that are critical in selecting a certain medication. Do you feel comfortable? Does it meet the clinical needs of the patient? Many providers will believe that they are handcuffed to the medications in the green. They can only choose from them. Absolutely false. If there is a medication in the green category that fits your clinical needs and all other factors that you consider, fantastic. But if there is not a medication in that category, what you do is you look at the other categories, the yellow and the red. If a medication falls into the yellow or the red category, what that tells you is that we detected variation in a gene or multiple genes that affect how these drugs do their job.
The fact that it's in the more problematic categories does not mean that it does not have clinical utility. That is so important. It means dosing it is going to require a bit more attention, go slower, go faster, and learning to mix it with other medications that they are taking. This is not a use or not use categorization. This is a guide.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Let's say medication X is in the red. This is the one that I was considering. Can I still use it? Of course you can. Just read the clinical considerations. As you mentioned, for an example, it may be in the red because a patient doesn't metabolize it well. How do you overcome that? We recommend starting at a lower dose. So a big thing with these pharmacogenomic tests, the number one thing that we mentioned is this is a tool. It is not going to tell you what to prescribe. But also is that even if there is a genetic interaction at play, you can still use the information to help make that medication more effective for your patient based on those results. And I think those two things, when you're using these tools, it's very, very important in order to make sure the tool is used appropriately.
Absolutely. Do these genes change over time, or is this the same set of genetic material that we get basically at conception?
Your genes do not change over time. So the genes we look at reach or surpass adult levels very early on in life. The good news is that some of the genes, the metabolism genes, actually surpass adult levels. CYP2D6, for example, surpasses adult levels by the age of 5 and then goes back down and normalizes. From a safety perspective, that is a good thing. These are the genes that you are born with. A once-in-a-lifetime test. Your genes are not going to change. One thing that I also do spend a lot of time talking about, though, is while your genes will not change, sometimes there are updates to these tests. Pharmacogenomics is a burgeoning field. There's new evidence coming out. If there's new evidence supporting a change in our test, so maybe adding a new medication or adding a new gene that has promising evidence behind it, the provider will say they want to upgrade this particular patient. I think these updates are relevant to them.
This brings us right to another category, the cost of getting the testing. I know that when I began using them years ago, they were incredibly expensive tests. Insurance started to pay for it, and then finally Medicare started to pay for it. How much of it is a cost variable now in getting the test paid for?
One thing, and it kind of speaks to something that I think we'll touch on a little bit later, but not all pharmacogenomic tests are the same, and we can talk about variability between the tests. One of the variables is cost. There's better coverage for it now. Cost is not prohibitive to patients getting access to information that may be helpful to their care.
Another very important question, and that's people will come to me and say that they can get the same testing done basically through Ancestry and Me. Maybe there are other organizations. And when I point out that both with your company and many of the other testing companies, it can be done only under a prescription indicating absolute medical necessity.
This has to be ordered by a clinician for what they deem to be medically necessary. That's a big difference between our company and like a 23andMe. You can't order this yourself as a patient. This is meant to be used as a clinical tool for healthcare providers with the medication selection process. Also, methods are different. When you're looking at more global panels that look at everything, that's going to tell you very different information versus targeted genotyping. So we look at certain areas of the genes that have been shown to have an effect on metabolism or medication outcomes and provide information specifically to those genes. It's apples and oranges.
I've had people come here and bring the genetic testing results from another company, and not one of them that are Medicare approved and require a prescription. I can't speak to the accuracy of their testing. People say, well, it says here I should be on this, I should be on that, and so on and so on. It speaks to the larger issue of how to use medical testing.
If you don't mind, I would love to speak to some differences. Not all of these tests are created equally. There's a couple of things that are the big differentiators. One would be clinical evidence. The report has robust evidence behind it, just RCTs in the mental health space, testing the utility of pharmacogenomics.
What's an RTC for people who don't know what it is?
An RCT is a randomized control trial. The clinical utility of the test has been evaluated in clinical trials, and these trials have been set up in a way where you have two groups. One group, patients are getting treatment for major depressive disorder, and the healthcare provider would treat the patient as they normally would, the standard of clinical care, and we call that treatment as usual, or TAU. We compare clinical outcomes to when a provider has access to pharmacogenomic testing. Both arms of these clinical trials are receiving active therapy. The only difference is that those in the guided arm, their provider has access to pharmacogenomic testing to assist with the medication selection process. The most recent clinical trials show improved outcomes, improved rates of remission when providers had access to these tests, which was in a veteran population. So the guided trial did not show significant changes in symptom improvement over time, but they did show improvement, statistically significant improvements in response and remission. The second differentiator is the genes that we look at. But to be more specific, the genes that have a very high scientific bar. A lot of times there's kind of this conception that more is better. We have hundreds and hundreds of genes, so why wouldn't you test for everything? And the reason for that is that have strong scientific evidence showing in multiple patient populations and multiple studies that variation in these genes can actually affect outcomes. Dozens of genes, in theory, would be really interesting to look at because they make sense. Like, oh, if a variation in this gene is found, that probably would affect medication outcomes. But if they're not proven, and the reason that that's important is because if we started adding kind of experimental genes, that would just water down the validity of The first differentiator is clinical evidence. The second differentiator is caliber of scientific evidence required to add genes. And then third is methods. Not everyone looks at genes the same. And what I mean by that is there are a couple different methodologies used in pharmacogenomics. One is called single gene testing. Single gene testing will typically look at a gene that is the most involved in the metabolism of that certain gene, the genotype results of that, and give you dosing recommendations. Also, multi-gene tests. These panels will say, okay, we recognize that there are actually multiple players in the metabolism of this gene. They will look at, let's call it three genes, and provide outputs for all of them and give a recommendation based on that. The approach is called a weighted multi. So what that means is that most medications, most mental health medications, are metabolized by numerous genes. However, we know that not all genes play the equal role. If there's three genes, we know that they're not all doing 33.3% of the load of metabolism. That's scientifically inaccurate. So what we do is we provide a weight to each of these genes, saying one gene contributes X percentage, another gene contributes Y percentage. Three big umbrella buckets: clinical evidence, scientific evidence, and our methods. Those are the big three differentiators. I'm happy to dive a little bit deeper.
My response to listening to the differentiations is that there truly is more nuance to this test than simply, I can take the medicine. The categorizations of doing genetic testing, the message to take home, however, for the patient and the doctors is to understand the specifics, the nuances, what lies in the shadow of this testing. It is an incredibly powerful tool. And unfortunately, I just don't want it to be used in an overly simplistic manner. I have had people come to me testing from other doctors who have ordered and say, I was put on a medication in the green side and it did not make me feel better. What's going on? But that is such a common misconception and misinterpretation of what this is all about.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with everything you just said, because as you mentioned, it is nuanced. It does take some education in order to ensure proper utility of the report. What pharmacogenomic testing is and what it is not. Those are two very important things to understand when you're utilizing this test.
Absolutely. I thank you so much. And again, Rachel Earls has a PhD in molecular science, and she has been working in genomic areas for many years. She's very kind to take us through a walk about a topic that's rather complex but necessary for us to understand, because we now have a tool when they need medications. Dr. Earls, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.